Pachi! On the public road. Chutam. Some possession dropped. Tishtati. It remains. Dishta rakshitam. Protected by destiny. Grihe. At home. Sitam. Although situated. Tatvi hatam.
Struck by the will of the Supreme.
Vinashyati.
It is lost.
Jivati.
Remains alive.
Anatta api.
Although without a protector.
Tat ikshitaha.
Being protected by the Lord.
Vane.
In the forest.
Grihe.
At home.
Abhiguptaha.
Well hidden and protected.
Asya.
Of this one.
Hataha.
Struck.
Na.
Not.
Jivati.
Lives. Translation. Sometimes one loses his money on a public street, where everyone can see it, and yet his money is protected by destiny and not seen by others. Thus, the man who lost it gets it back. On the other hand, if the Lord does not give protection, even money maintained very securely at home is lost. If the Supreme Lord gives one protection, even though one has no protector and is in the jungle, one remains alive, whereas a person well protected at home by relatives and others sometimes dies, no one being able to protect him. So, purport by Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. These are examples of the supremacy of the Lord. Our plans to protect or annihilate do not act, for whatever he thinks of doing actually happens. The examples given in this regard are practical. Everyone has had such practical experiences, and there are also many other clear examples. For instance, Prahlad Maharaj said that a child is certainly dependent on his father and mother, but in spite of their presence, the child is harassed in many ways. Sometimes, in spite of a supply of good medicine and an experienced physician, a patient does not survive. Therefore, since everything is dependent on the free will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, our only duty is to surrender unto him and seek his protection. So, patichitam tishtati dishtarakshitam grahesitam tadvihatam vinashyati jivachyanato titarakshito vane grahebi gupto sya ato na jivati. So, omaganata madanda sya gananjana shlakaya chakshurin meditam yena tasmai shigurave namaha. So, of course, we find in Lord Chaitanya's teachings two of the essential items of surrender are to always believe in the Lord's protection and maintenance. And there's other ones, like accepting everything favorable, rejecting everything unfavorable, to be always meek and humble, and to have no other separate interests other than the interests of the Lord. But two essential items are to always accept the Lord's protection and the Lord's maintenance, two things. So, what I'm going to talk about in class today is how this is sometimes misunderstood. This, Lord's protection and Lord's maintenance. Of course, that's the way sannyasis should definitely think. We're talking about Varnashram Dharma. Sannyasis, in the highest stage of sannyas, or let's talk about the lower stages of sannyas. In the lower stages of sannyas, like Bahudak, then sannyasis are not yet convinced about the Lord's protection and maintenance. So they live in the same village that their family lived in. And their children will actually bring the food that their wife has cooked for them. Mm-hmm. We don't do that in ISKCON. Can you imagine that? Because actually it's not appropriate. But in any case, that it was a system of gradually becoming renounced. So then after that, the guy realized, well, maybe I don't need to live in the same village. And then he does something called Madhukari. That's the next stage. Madhukari means like a bee who goes from one flower to another and collects a little pollen in each flower. Sometimes you see devotees that go around Braj and they do Madhukari. And they get one japati from each house. Not 10 japatis, but should be one japati in each house. It's kind of funny. Sometimes people do Madhukari and they eat a lot in one person's house. Just like what we're doing here when we go around to people's houses, is not exactly Madhukari because we eat a lot. It's a difference. Anyway, it's different. So then after Madhukari, you realize maybe Krishna's providing the food. And then you do the Parvajakacharya stuff. And Parvajakacharya means wandering mendicant, like we say Prabhupada, about Prabhupada, Paramahansa, Parvajakacharya. So that means you just wander around and then depend on Krishna for food, but you still, you know, you're going to ask people, where's dinner tonight? You're depending on Krishna, but you ask people. And you basically, yeah, you have to make some arrangement. Just like we're doing here. That's Parvajakacharya stuff. We say to Govardhan, what's on the spreadsheet for tonight? In whose house are we taking dinner at tonight? And then, you know, then I'm putting my little yeast in the bag and other things. That's Parvajakacharya sannyas. And then finally, there's Paramahamsa sannyas, where you don't even make any endeavor to eat. An example of that is Madhavendra Puri. You remember Madhavendra Puri? Madhavendra Puri went to Vrindavan, and he didn't make any endeavor to eat. And who brought him food? Krishna. Krishna, not Radharani. Krishna brought him food. A little bit of condensed milk and a little container. And he, basically, he accepted the food. He didn't know it was Krishna. But then that night he had a dream, and Krishna said, I've been hidden in the bushes, you know, please come and take me out, because they had hidden the deity because of the Muslims attacking. And that's, of course, that's Gopal, the famous Gopal, later became Natchi. And he's in Nathdwara right now. And so Madhavendra Puri took him out, and that was very nice. And then another time, Madhavendra Puri was in near the Shirachara Gopinath temple in a place called Ramuna in Orissa. And he wanted to taste some of the sweet rice, not because he was lusty, but because he wanted to find out how to prepare it for his deity, Gopal. And so just thinking like that, he became embarrassed because he thought, I want to taste the sweet rice before it's offered to the Lord. And therefore he went to the marketplace and sat down and chanted Hare Krishna. And the deity stole the sweet rice from the pujari, hid it under his skirt, and the sweet rice was brought to Madhavendra Puri. It's nice, isn't it? That's, you know, you have all these nice stories where devotees are being maintained in different ways. Or another story about how Krishna maintains his devotees is that story of Srivas Thakur, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Srivas Thakur, how do you maintain your family? And he says, I have a 1-2-3 technique, that if I'm made to fast for 3 days, I'm going to jump in the Ganges and die. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, don't even think like that. Because even if the goddess of fortune has to go begging, he said, then you always have enough in your house. You know, even if Lakshmi doesn't have enough Lakshmi, then you always have enough in your house, so then don't worry about it. You know, we'll take care of you. So there's that example, too. So what I'm trying to do is contrast an example of how that happens, but also to show how we shouldn't take advantage of that fact. And that there's some stories that illustrate that fact, that too. Like there's the story of Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami. When Rupa Goswami wanted to make some nice prasad for his brother. You know, the brother Sanatana Goswami is the older of the two. And so he was thinking, I want to make some nice prasadam for my brother. So Rupa Goswami was thinking like that. But I don't have any ingredients. And it's a famous story, of course. And then who came? A little, nice, pretty little girl came. Yeah, gave him the ingredients. And, you know, he cooked. And later on, Sanatana Goswami came, and he was able to offer these nice sweets and condensed milk and everything like that to Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami asked him, where have you gotten these ingredients from? And Rupa Goswami said, just a little village girl came. And then Sanatana Goswami got really angry. He said, don't you understand, we're not supposed to take service from the Lord. You were supposed to give service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so that was another instance of, I wouldn't say it was improper on the part of Rupa Goswami, but just the example given is that, you know, we shouldn't be thinking, oh, the Lord's going to protect me and maintain me. I don't have to do anything. And so there's another example, two more examples that occurred with Sanatana Goswami and Braj. One, they're both dealing with Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami, of course, was the one who excavated Radhakund and Shyamakund. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the one who found Radhakund and Shyamakund. There were two paddy fields. In the paddy fields, there are two ponds in the paddy fields. And one was called Gauri Kund and the other one something Krishna Kund or something. And Raghunath Das Goswami excavated them, and of course during his excavation there's many different stories of what occurred, such as, you know, we hit one stone when they were excavating, or a well, so the villagers could use the water from the well rather than use the water from Radhakund to clean with, and then hit the stone started bleeding. That was the tongue of Govardhan. And many, many stories are there about Raghunath Das Goswami's excavating Radhakund and Shyamakund. So anyway, so Raghunath Das Goswami, he was thinking, you know, the Lord will always maintain me and protect me. So he didn't even take trouble to build a bhajan kutir. You know, that's how renounced the sannyasis, and especially Raghunath Das Goswami was at that particular time. Can you imagine? You don't even have to take the trouble to cover your head or anything like that, or protect yourself from the rain. Something similar happened with Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur when he was chanting in a hut that it was leaking in the roof, and he didn't even take the trouble to fix the roof. Can you imagine that? Imagine sitting here and the water coming down, Krishna Vijaya saying, no, it's not worth the trouble. It's not worth the trouble to fix. Maharaj, just hold an umbrella over your head while you're giving class. I don't think I'd be too happy. Plus, we'd get on the computer, it would be a problem. So with Raghunath Das Goswami, he didn't even want to take the trouble of building a little tiny bhajan kutir. If you see Raghunath Das Goswami's bhajan kutir, it's right in the banks of Shyamakund, not Radhakund, which is interesting also, because you find devotees, they go to Radhakund, Shyamakund, and they're very enthusiastic about Radhakund, taking a bath in Radhakund, but they think Shyamakund, well, it's all right. Or like even on the tail of Govardhan, there's this Navakund and Apsarakund, or there's a second Radhakund and Shyamakund on the tail of Govardhan. And the Apsarakund, which is Radharani's Kund, is well taken care of, but the Navakund is a mess. But people don't realize that Radharani bathes more in Shyamakund than in Radhakund. And, you know, there's this whole place right near Raghunath Das Goswami's bhajan kutir, which he later built. I'll tell the story about that. But which is on the bank of the Shyamakund, and there's actually the story of the pilu tree. Remember? Does anyone remember the story I told?
Yeah.
How the pilu tree was a Brahmin, and the pilu tree later on taught... He was utilized, or the tree was utilized to hold the gopis' clothes while the gopis were bathing in Shyamakund. And that pilu tree later on talked to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and told him all the stories that we now tell. It's interesting, isn't it? That pilu tree. When I go there, I sit under the pilu tree and chant japa, you know, touching my head. It's a little tiny tree. It's a bush, actually. It's not. And also on the banks of Shyamakund, there are the five Pandavas. And that's why Shyamakund is such an unusual shape, because Raghunath Das Goswami was instructed not to cut them down. In a dream, he had a dream, and the Yudhisthira came to him and said that we're here on the banks of the Shyamakund, residing as trees. And now all the trees, except for the Bhima tree, is left there. They're left their bodies. You know, some of the trees are not even there. The Bhima tree is still there, just barely holding on. And that's the one by what's called the Manasa Bhavana Ghat. You've heard of the Manasa Bhavana Ghat? That's where the Pilu tree is, the Bhima tree is, and also where Raghunath Das Goswami would chant, which is interesting because he would chant more on the banks of the Shyamakund than the Radhakund. Think about that for a second. Anyway, so devotees should understand if you want to please Radharani, you have to please Krishna. You can't separate the two. You know, people chant Radhe, Radhe, Radhe. But actually, if you please Krishna, that will please Radharani more than if you please her directly. It's an interesting thing to think about. Although, you know, you have many people, oh, Radhe, 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 Radhe. I just want to worship Radharani. I'm just her servant. Forget about that Krishna guy. So, Raghunath Das Goswami, he's also the Prayojana Acharya, which means he's the Acharya of the highest aspect of devotional service, reaching back to Godhead. So, let's get back to the story. So, Raghunath Das Goswami was chanting on the banks of the Shyamakund. And as he was chanting on the banks of the Shyamakund, there's two stories, actually. One, it was very hot. Very, very hot. And you know Vrindavan, it gets very hot. So, Sanatan Goswami happened to come along, and the sun was shining very, very hard. It was the middle of the summer. Sanatan Goswami came along, and he saw that there was this young girl holding her cloth over Raghunath Das Goswami's head, you know, shielding him from the sun. And, of course, that was Radharani. Of course, Sanatan Goswami was happy to see Radharani. But, yeah, but then he went to Raghunath Das Goswami, and he said, this is not appropriate. You are taking service from Srimati Radharani. In other words, you should make some endeavor to protect yourself. That was the point I'm making about this verse. That not that you just like wander on the street and expect Krishna to become your servant. So he said, make the endeavor to protect, construct a bhajan kutir. Well, Raghunath Das Goswami was not that convinced at that point. He was so renounced. But later on, there was another thing that happened. Sanatan Goswami saw Raghunath Das Goswami chanting by the banks of the either Shyamakund or Radhakund. And there were tigers there. There were two tigers there. And, you know, tigers in India are not like pussycats. You know what a pussycat is? You know, the little cats you have here. You know, I've seen cats around here. Not the cute little things that purr. I mean, these Bengali tigers, they're bigger than any of us. They can weigh several hundred kilos. And you know, you really can't fight with one. Although Madhvacharya was able to fight with a Bengali tiger and defeat him. Because Madhvacharya was Vayuputra. So what happened is that there were tigers around there, and then Krishna was standing guard right next to Raghunath Das Goswami. Of course, Raghunath Das Goswami didn't see him. He was like behind him, standing guard, I guess with a stick or something. In those days, I mean, Krishna doesn't use a gun, so. It's not that Krishna had one of these, like, pistols or something like that. But he was standing guard, and he was protecting Raghunath Das Goswami. And so the Sanatan Goswami went up to him again, and he said, look, you're taking service from Krishna now. Build a kutir. That is my order. And of course, Sanatan Goswami was the senior of the Goswamis. Raghunath Das Goswami was junior to him. And not as junior as Jiva Goswami, but he was junior. And because it was the order of Sanatan Goswami, then he just built the kutir. And that's why you see this little tiny kutir. It's roughly, I guess, the size of this room here. You ever seen it? It's one of these small rooms. It's right in front of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's bhajan kutir. There's also a bhajan kutir of Sanatan Goswami there. There's two little tiny rooms. Maybe they're this wide. And that was Raghunath. So in other words, he didn't want to make much of an endeavor. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's bhajan kutir is a little bit bigger. So when you go to Radhakund, you should look at these nice places like that. And you remember that particular pastime. There's even a picture there. Right there, Raghunath Das Goswami and Radharani, and also there's another picture with Krishna and the tigers. It's very beautiful. And you can look for it on the internet and see that. So the point I'm making is that he was thinking Krishna's going to protect me, but it was inappropriate to take that service from Krishna. So therefore, a devotee should not simply, at least unless he's a sannyasi in the Paramahansa platform, like Madhavendra Puri, a devotee shouldn't just become lazy and think that, you know, Krishna's going to just provide everything for me, because it is our business to serve Krishna, not to be served by Krishna. Therefore, we have to make endeavor for our own personal maintenance and protection. I mean, just like there was a story when Prabhupada was present, that devotees got in, several times it happened, devotees got in car accidents because of their own fault. In other words, they fell asleep. And that was common in the 1970s in ISKCON. Devotees would fall asleep while they were driving cars because devotees try to get by in very, very little sleep, less than 6 hours. And, I mean, I did the same thing. I fell asleep. But fortunately, I had the self-control to fall asleep only at the stoplights. You know, I knew that it was dangerous to fall asleep while you're on the motorway, so I took my naps, you know, and then I was woken up by the horns for the people in back of me, because the stoplight would turn green, and I would still be sleeping for about a half a minute, like that, and go, okay, next stoplight, so... So that's why I like roads that had a lot of stoplights on them. Because I could take a nap. And then also when, you know, we would drop the devotees off on Sankirtan, and I'd just pull the van into some parking lot and go to sleep. So it was really austere. But the point is that many devotees died because of, you know, accidents on the motorway. And they were thinking, you know, oh, Krishna... It's Krishna's mercy. And Prabhupada said, no, it's their foolishness. In other words, they were trying to take service of Krishna. I mean, another thing that... I mean, the only accident I ever got into on the motorway was... It was raining very heavy. It was in the state of Florida. And the tires were bald. You know what bald tires are? Just like I see, they have these motorcycles here with bald tires, and I just wonder how they maneuver during the rain. Because there's this thing called hydroplaning, which means the it's like skiing, water skiing for a car. But you have no control. It's like you're on ice. Anyone ever experience this when they're driving? It's like you're on ice, and then you're just like drifting from one... You can turn the steering wheel. It doesn't make any difference. And don't apply the brakes. That's the worst thing you can do, because then you'll skid completely out of control. So I got an accident like that because of the bald tires on the car. And the police still charged me, of course. Even though it wasn't my car. Because, you know, it was irresponsible. So in other words, it wasn't that, you know, Krishna... And one devotee got severely injured. I didn't. I mean, the car just flipped. And so you can say, why didn't Krishna protect me? Because I was foolish. I didn't use my brain. So Krishna protects you by giving you intelligence sometimes. It's like that story Prabhupada tells them. You know, I always tell that story about the guy who was a great devotee of the Lord. And he always depended on Krishna for his protection. And then it came rain. You know, it was like, it happened in Fiji, actually. It was raining. And the water was rising to the first level of the house, and the boats came by. The story in Nandi, it actually happened. The boats came by. And they said, please go in the boat. And he said, no, God is always protecting me and maintaining me. And then the water got higher, and the helicopter came by. He was on the roof. And he said, God will protect me and maintain me. And basically, the water rose even further, and the guy died. And then when he saw God, somehow or other, he was a little God conscious. He saw God after he died. He said, why didn't you protect me? And he said, you fool. Didn't you see the helicopter and the boat that I sent for you? So in other words, we want to order God around. That's the real problem. So we don't want to take this verse and the purport out of context and think, you know, Krishna's going to protect my children. Just the other day, you know, we were talking to some people about raising their children in Krishna consciousness, because I'm very worried about the children. And sometimes people say, Well, if Krishna wants them to become Krishna conscious, they'll become Krishna conscious. If it's meant to be, if it's fate. So I was thinking, boy, if everything is fate, then why, I don't have to do anything. I mean, I if it's fate, then I'm going to become Krishna conscious. You know, why do these austerities of waking up early in the morning? If it's fate, then I can just wake up any time in the morning, right? And not worry about preaching, because if preaching, if it's fate that you'll become, that you'll join the movement, you'll join anyway. So I don't have to do anything. It's nice. Just relax and we go back to God at the time of death. Because it's fate, you know, if Krishna desires. But, you know, we are not subjected to fate. And we can actually, as devotees, we can counteract fate. We can change our future in many different ways. And so we do have control over these things. And so in other words, we should make endeavor, like we're talking about the children, make endeavor, the best endeavor possible to make the children Krishna conscious. Not that just leave it up to Krishna, you know, because they have good genes, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, therefore Krishna's going to take care of them. It doesn't work like that. You got to use your brain, your God-given brain. You got to make a lot of endeavor, and then you may be successful, you may not. Right? I mean, ultimately, it is up to Krishna. But as they say, man proposes, God disposes. In other words, you have to do your work. And then God will take care of the rest, whatever way is meant, what he wants it to be. But you still have to endeavor to the fullest of your ability and strength. So these are important points based upon this verse. You know, don't try to make Krishna your servant and think he's going to do everything if you act in a foolish way. You know, if I don't wear a seatbelt, you know, because Krishna, I've had devotees tell me that. You know, even sannyasis tell me, I said, put on your seatbelt, please. And they said, no, don't. I believe in Krishna. I said, what does that have to do with anything? Krishna's given you the seatbelt. Another time I was in Vrindavan, I was doing Govardhan Parikrama, and a bull started chasing me. You know, one of these big bulls. I was running away from the bull, and I jumped over a wall or something like that. You know, the bull with the horns and everything. You know, they're not just like cute little cows there. You know, so I just didn't want to take darshan of the bull. So, but if people were laughing at me, and they said, don't you have faith in Krishna? I said, huh? Does faith in Krishna mean I just have to stand there and say, you know, Krishna, protect me, like, you know, you're going to come like it's Aristasura and kill him or something like that? No. I said, Krishna gave me the strength, the intelligence, I ran away. And I cited the example that Prabhupada got gored by a bull. And Prabhupada was in Delhi, and a bull actually gored him with his horns, and he was left on the street practically. He had to crawl back home. Luckily, he didn't get any severe infections. So, anyway, we do an endeavor, but then we leave the rest up to Krishna. Not that Krishna does all the endeavor, and then we just relax and have a good old time. So you all, you know, if you're grihastas, you have to work, maintain your family. Don't be like Srivastava Thakur and say, Krishna, you maintain my family, I'm not going to work today. Because you're going to find yourself out in the street. You have to pay your mortgages. You think Krishna's going to come and pay? Of course, sometimes if you're not able to, like I gave that example last night, we were talking about when we couldn't pay the rent on the temple, that someone just walked up to us and gave us the money for the rent and walked away and he disappeared. I mean, sometimes it happens like that. If in certain circumstances, but don't depend on that happening. Okay, any questions or comments? But Krishna manifests himself as intelligence, as strength. What did he say? In the strength of the strong, the intelligence of the intelligent. You know, these are all manifestations of Krishna. So what does it mean to depend on Krishna? You see what strength, intelligence, and facility Krishna is giving you. That's Krishna too. Like if you just see Krishna there playing his flute in the spiritual world, and not his manifestations in this world, like we have in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, the 10th chapter, opulences of the absolute, then then you're really not understanding God. You're just seeing him as imminent, but not eminent. And there's a difference. This is a whole discussion. It's one of the philosophical discussions. Is God completely out there, or is he part of the material world? So of course, we have our Chincha Beta Beta Tattva philosophy, where God is one and different from everything simultaneously. Everything is energy. That's what we mean by Chincha Beta Beta Tattva. So in other words, Krishna manifests himself in ways that perhaps you wouldn't expect. But that's Krishna manifesting himself. You know, you're given a job, that's Krishna manifesting himself. Things, you know, like intelligence or things that happen, it's just Krishna manifesting himself. Because you have to take advantage of it. In other words, like that story of the guy drowning, you're not seeing Krishna when he comes to you. And then you want Krishna to come to you in the way that you want. That's what it means to take service from Krishna. You're dictating to Krishna, you should take care of me like this. And you should become my servant. Does that make sense? Yeah, one has to use their intelligence. It's a little subtle. That's a little subtle. And it also differs according to one's ashram, too. Like for me to get a job is prohibited. I mean, this is Varnashram Dharma. I can't say, well, you know, I got to go travel everywhere, so, you know, it's easier if I work during the Christmas marathon doing, like in America, they have devotees work at this calendar club. You ever heard of that before? They sell calendars in the mall. They have like a little kiosk in the mall, and they make money for the rest. Some of the grasses do that. So maybe I should get a job. It'd be easier. Easier than going house to house and having to eat so much. I mean, actually would be, you know. At least I can control when I eat and everything like that. But it's not dharmic. I'm not supposed to do that. So for me, it would be prohibited. For you, it's not. You know, I can work in the tech field, too. I need a little more training because I'm not up to date on all the different networking things. But, you know, it would be easy. Actually, it would be easy because of my background. Science and technology are easy. I can get Microsoft certification within 5-6 months. Easy. That would be easy for me. I mean, it would be sense gratification, basically. But it would be fun, you know. Depending on your nature, your psychophysical nature, certain things are fun. If you ask me to play sports, that's boring, horrible, disgusting, but if you ask me to learn technological things, I get excited. So I could do that, but it's not what Krishna wants. So in other words, Krishna doesn't want me to maintain myself like that. He wants something different. You know, according to my dharma, it's different. My Varnashram dharma, it's different. So if you're a householder and you're a Vaishya, you know, you have something to do. And people ask, you know, how can I determine whether I'm a Vaishya or a Shudra or a Brahmin? Or Kshatriya, it's really easy. It's really easy. We had this discussion in Fiji. Someone said, I like to do all those things. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I like to read. Sometimes I like to count money. Sometimes, or make money. Sometimes I like to I like to be the boss, especially in my home. Sometimes, and sometimes I like to just, you know, work on my car engine. So the question was, am I a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra? Of course, we do have mixed modes. And I said, think of the thing you'd like to do continually 8 hours a day. Then you can really determine. We all like to do little things like that. You know, sometimes I like to fix my computer, too. It doesn't mean I'm a Shudra. But I wouldn't do it for 8 hours a day. It would drive me crazy. But I can read, I can chant. Those things I can do all day long, you know, and preach Krishna consciousness. So therefore, you know, I understand my varna in that particular way. So you work according to your varna, because it's varnashram comes from Krishna. And you maintain yourself according to your varna. And if you're a sannyasi in, you know, a different stage of life, that's how you maintain yourself. But build a bhajan kutir if necessary. Yeah. Okay. Okay, Maharaj. It's interesting that we have a disciple in Fiji who actually, his name is Maharaj. You understand? Yeah, Dr. Maharaj. Ramanuga, so I said, he said, Maharaj. I said, yes, Maharaj. And then we went somewhere, and I said, I'm his son. I'm your Krishna Maharaj, and he's my pita, father. Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking it's sort of the opposite of what we experience on a material platform.
Yeah.
If I depend on somebody, that means I'm not making an endeavor. I'm depending on them.
Yeah.
If I depend on my father to take care of everything, I won't go out and
work yourself. Yeah.
Work myself. He's taking care. So it can be a little bit confusing when we come to Krishna conscious, come to devotional service practice. We're told to surrender means just depend on Krishna for your maintenance and your
protection.
It's hard to find the right balance.
It definitely is. But the difference is with your father, he's not giving you intelligence and strength. Whereas Krishna is the one who's giving. Yet your father is not manifest as your intelligence or as your strength or any of your abilities. Whereas that is a manifestation of Krishna. I mean, according to the Gita, isn't it? I am the ability of man. I'm the strength of the strong. I'm the intelligence of the intelligent. Right? I mean, these are verses in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm not making it up. So that's a manifestation of Krishna. Also, I'm the shark, too. So you stick your head in the shark's mouth. Not really. But you understand that you see Krishna in these things. Because any facility you get is coming from Krishna. But endeavor has to be there. I mean, there's like also another point in the Gita. There's five factors in action, of action, right? Does anyone know this? Gita, Bhagavad Gita? That's the verse. Five factors of action. Does anyone remember the five factors?
Is that the one, Noah?
There's the place, the doer.
Yeah.
The action itself, and what's the other one? Place, doer.
Place of action.
Yeah, place of action, and then ultimately the fifth factor is the super soul. Mm. But he's only one of the factors. He's the overseer and permitter. Remember that. He's not the doer. He's the overseer and permitter, according to the Bhagavad Gita. Mm. So you have to do, and then Krishna oversees and permits you or doesn't permit you to do that particular thing. But Krishna, the whole point is Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Krishna is everything. You can't just think of Krishna in the spiritual world. You have to see Krishna immanent. And he's in all matter. He's in every atom. He's giving us intelligence, forgetfulness, remembrance. The energy of the sun comes from him. I mean, everything. It's Krishna. Ham sarvasya prabhu matak sarvam pravartate iti matva vajantima. Right? Everybody knows that verse? I am the source of everything. Ham sarvasya prabhu. Everything comes from me. Everything's resting. Maya sarvamidam proktam sutre mani ganaiva. You know that verse? Sutre mani ganaiva. Everything rests on me just like what?
Pearls
rest on a thread. I mean, you don't see the thread if they're good pearls. Really good pearl strand. You won't see the thread underneath. But you understand there has to be a thread because they'd just be a bunch of marbles. They'd be loose. So everything rests on Krishna. Krishna is everywhere. And it's important to see that. So we have to make endeavor. Otherwise, I mean, I've seen that with devotees. Sometimes they get so damn lazy. And even One big problem we've had in ISKCON is the devotees get accustomed to money coming really fast because they went on Sankirtan before. This happened in the 1970s. They would go on Sankirtan, and eventually the Sankirtan was book distribution, which was nice. Then it became transformed into stickers and buckets. You have that here, too. Bucket Katan, rather than Sankirtan. I think there's one or two devotees who still do buckets. But and then what happened is that when the devotees got married, they thought it was Maya to work. So therefore, I should just, not me, of course, but thinking of themselves, speaking on behalf of them, therefore I should just continue selling stickers because in 2 hours, we have devotees who sell stickers and hats, and they make $2,000 a day. Yeah. Don't get tempted, Ananda. I'm not going to teach you how to do it. So, you know, they go to places. I mean, there's some people who go to this place called Lincoln Center in New York, and they're so-called collecting for some charity, and the charity happens to be themselves, I guess, or their family or something, and they may give a few dollars to the charity just to be legal. They come under the legal heading of professional collectors. In the United States, you can collect for a charity and give 10% to the charity and keep 90% to yourself, and that's legal. I don't know what the law is here, but there are professional people who collect professionally for charities. I'm sure you have the people like that here. And if you look at their books, you'll see that most of the money doesn't go to the charity. It goes towards their collectors or publicity or things like that. So then devotees got into this whole mood. And if you go to any rock and roll, they don't call it rock and roll anymore, but any sort of music concert in the United States, you will find more devotees there than you'll see at Mangalarti in the temple. I mean, there'll be like 20 devotees, and they won't be distributing books. They'll be distributing stickers is a big thing, and then they have the hats. They make the hats especially up for a game, like a football game or something like that. With it, they'll have the hats. They'll say, "Go Jets, go!" Or if you go into New Orleans, New Orleans, the party city, and the devotees would dress up in uniforms with a little badge on it that's saying "Party Patrol," and they would stop people on the street. It still goes on, and say, "We're giving you a citation for having too much fun." I don't know if you ever had that here in Australia. The Americans are very inventive, All the nonsense that's in the world was practically came from America. As well as Krishna consciousness after probably went there. But so in other words, they don't want to do their dharmic responsibility. Because someone's a householder, they should work in an honest, respectable way. It's not that we want to tell people that our householders make a living by, going out in the street and selling stickers, or hats or something. And that's not respectable. I mean, it's bad for the reputation of our society and what to speak of the newspaper picks up on it or something like that. So in other words, people just, they get addicted to an easy life. And that's too much dependence. Also, that's called institutionalization in the sociological field. That people who are members of an institution like the army or the navy or a religious institute like monks or nuns, they actually become quite dysfunctional after some time. And they have to, even when they leave their institution, there's a lot of endeavor to acclimate them to society again. They need a lot of counseling after that. Because they're used to it. I mean, imagine living where everything's provided for you, your toothpaste, your toothbrush.
Over here, when travelers come from India, it's very difficult, even when they get a permanent residence here, it's difficult for them to, once they get married, to cross the line. And
it's very difficult. But they usually look for some nice Aussie wife so they can get a PR, So you go in the temple, and not always, but this is what I've seen here and also in America, that some brahmachari comes in, and the lady comes in. It doesn't matter how old she is, as long as she has either a PR. Isn't that going around? We saw that. As long as she has a PR or she's a citizen, you propose to her. Because that way you'll get your PR.
After
what? After is another thing. After you get your PR, no more deity service, no more wife even. I mean, you go find another one in India. But, anyway, it's not a good situation that people who are going to get married should take responsibility for their lives. I should take responsibility for my life, too. I mean, I have to be responsible. And sometimes you find sannyasis becoming very dysfunctional. They may travel with many, many servants who just like put their socks on for them, tie their shoes for them. I mean, I personally have to stop people from doing a lot of that stuff because it just drives me crazy. when people want to just like, you know, fan me all day long and feed me grapes. You know, next thing they want to do is chew my food for me. Yeah. What's that?
What about devotees who don't get married?
Yeah.
And they become full-time pujaris in the temple. Uh-huh. So really, like, and they do get old at one stage, and they don't have any family or someone to look up. In terms of temple protection, is it okay for them to depend on the temple? Or
well,
they
should be practical. They should see if the temple or the organization has the resources to do that. You know, looking at ISKCON right now, most places, ISKCON doesn't have the resources. I mean, what are we going to do if someone becomes disabled? Oh, go back to your mother. You know, but I'm 80 years old. My mother passed away 30 years ago, so. Now, what do you do? So I think people should take responsibility and not think impractically that. You know, I would say in some places, maybe ISKCON does have the resources. I know in Tirupati, for example, they're making arrangements. They actually bought a piece of property for the older devotees who can no longer, you know, do active service. And I would say in that case, yeah. You know, so they know they're going to be taken care of.
But if you have given service to the temple, like in Mayapur, I mean, if you have done tenuous service in Mayapur...
The Mayapur has an arrangement, too.
But if you have done tenuous service... In Mayapur, then you can stay there.
Yeah, the Mayapur has an arrangement for that. But, you know, most places in the West don't have the arrangement for that. I mean, I don't know Sydney that well, so I can't say. But, you know, if I was a brahmachari in the Sydney temple, I would know that I wouldn't get taken care of for the rest of my life. You know, as soon as...
The temple president changed the rules.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen in the future. It's just like, you could be out in the street... Living on the government money in a little while. So it's like the Catholic Church, they take care of people. What time?
The ceremony is to invite devotees who are not working. Go and find a job.
Yeah, go and find
because
a job.
There is no temporary not to work.
Yeah.
But if you get a job, you get 10% of your salary.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I think that's the honest thing to do.
So that was criticized, I mean, in the beginning, like, he encouraged all his Dallas devotees to go out, and he was criticized by him also.
That's what they should do. He did the right thing. Because practically speaking, in most places, ISKCON is not going to be able to take care of people in their old age. However, you know, there may be certain circumstances. I mean, I know in our temple in North Carolina, we have devotees who work with us for many years. So, you know, as long as I'm around, I'll make sure that they get taken care of for the rest of their lives. You know, I made that personal obligation, you know, with people who have been serving for many years, that it's my responsibility to do that. But you don't have that all the time. And you know, because of my position, I can make sure that happens. But if I was just a temple president, I could get fired tomorrow. They usually don't fire gurus. Unless they do something really weird. But usually, I mean, I pretty much have job security. But the temple president could be out on his, you know, whatever, in the street tomorrow. You can fire. We've fired plenty of temple presidents. Yeah, I know that. I know there's GBC rules, but, you know, you can say, you know, it's time for you to go. You can make it difficult enough for that he'll quit voluntarily or involuntarily. So... it's not that I go around firing temple presidents. But in Fiji, it certainly happens.
Well, Fiji is not...
I mean, there have been revolutions against temple presidents there.
Fiji is not...
The rest of the world's pretty political, too.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, there can be... There was... Anyway, I've seen in Suva there was a revolution against one particular temple president. He was removed. And then... You know, so many things happen. But it's not just Fiji. All right, I think we have to end. Right, it's time for taking care of my deities. Almost time for prasad. We're going to take prasad here this morning. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
I was collecting that.